a pleasure to say hello again. We have the chapter 12 before us of John, the entry into Jerusalem. And I think it opens up for us many of the hidden doorways that we've all been trying to enter. The importance of truth cannot be overstressed. If you follow what appears to be a truth, but isn't, naturally you're going to run into difficulty. And to find what is truth and what is not, what to follow and what not to follow, has been one of the major problems, if not the major problem, of our world. What shall we follow? What is the truth? I, says the Christ, am the truth. Now, what does that leave you to follow beside I, the Christ? Unless, of course, you're of the opinion that there is another truth than the Christ. As you know, the world is of another opinion. I don't wish to necessarily imply that we have a third of a million people out of their homes today because there are floods in 8 different states because they don't know Christ, or that we have a war in Vietnam because we don't know Christ, and so on down the list. But if we do not follow truth, we are in violation of it. And you may have discovered that if you do not have a relationship with truth, that your life suffers. Whereas when you have a relationship with truth, your life turns right around and yields back to you the truth of that relationship. In other words, you act in conformity with your relationship to truth. And this is how you sow to the truth or not to the truth. But to know the truth is necessary before you can act in relationship to it. And we have all been unaware of the depth of the truth that we must know. We have relied on human methods. And at times we have relied on psychic methods. And other times we have relied on authorities. Other times we have relied on the literal meanings of the Bible. And again we have relied on authors. We have relied on everything except Christ. And our reason was that we could not find Christ. We could talk about Christ. We could say, I am the Christ. We could read about Christ. We could see what Christ does in the form of Jesus. But we could not find the Christ of our own being. And that's the only place where you can find the truth. What I say unto you is the truth. And unless you hear my voice, unless you are one with Christ of your own self, for you there is no divine guidance, and that which you follow is not the truth. The Lord does not build your house, and ultimately the termites come in, the flood comes in, the rain comes in. The foundation of it proves to be untruth. This chapter, along with all the others, emphasizes that there is only one truth. There aren't many truths. There's not the truth of Buddhism and the truth of Sufism and the truth of Christianity and the truth of Muslims and the truth of Hindus. and the truth of Judaism. There isn't a truth in everything that is different from another truth somewhere else. There is only truth, and it isn't divided. And truth is always the same. It never changes. If today you are in a different truth than you were in yesterday, then yesterday's truth was not truth at all. And if what you call truth today is going to be a new truth for you tomorrow, then the truth you have today is not truth. And finally, you must see that the only truth there is the truth that is always the same truth. And so the world goes on, not really looking for truth, but looking for security, looking for a better life. Now, we in this class are not making that mistake. We're looking for truth. And if you haven't realized that's what you're looking for, please nail it down. That's what you should be looking for, truth. Now, fortunately, the truth comes from Christ. And when the Christ utters a word, whether it's through Zechariah or Joel Goldsmith, it's still truth. When Christ speaks, that's truth. And you can count on it. It won't change tomorrow. It'll be truth 5 million human years from now, 5 million immortal years from now. The truth 2,000 years ago is the truth this instant. If it isn't, it's not truth. Now let's look at prophecy and see the difference between psychic prophecy, the prophecy of a human mind reaching into cosmic levels of thought, and spiritual prophecy. And you'll see the difference between truth and the deception of truth. We're going to look here at Zechariah. Here he is in 9:9, saying something that we're going to read about in our chapter 12. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, thy king cometh. Unto thee he is just, and having salvation, lowly, and riding upon an ass, and upon a colt, the foal of an ass. This is Zechariah in the Old Testament. This is a prophecy. Who makes this prophecy? Zechariah? No. I, Christ, speak through Zechariah. This is I, Christ, saying, your king comes. He is just in having salvation. Salvation. Lowly. And riding upon an ass and upon a colt, the foal of an ass. This is I, Christ, speaking through Zechariah about salvation. Here's John 12. And Jesus, when he had found a young ass, sat thereon as it is written. Now then, the question is, why does this prophecy come true? Think of the years between the making of the prophecy and the appearance thereof into the visible world. Who spoke the prophecy? I, Christ, spoke the prophecy. Who enacts the prophecy? Who comes forth doing precisely what was prophesied, the very one who had spoken the prophecy? I, Christ, speaking through Zechariah, I, Christ, acting through Jesus. Do you see why the prophecy must come true when it's a spiritual prophecy? The prophesier and the doer are one and the same. Do you see that when the voice speaks through you, that he who speaks through you will perform that which he speaks? I go before you to make the crooked places straight. I who speak unto you, through you, in you, I am the truth. And that is why I am the way. When the Lord builds the house, you labor not in vain. But unless I speak through you, to give you the truth, the guidance, the wisdom, the daily bread, the knowledge, the understanding, the love, the direction. What are you going to do? You're going to have to do it yourself. But when I, the Lord, speak unto you, I perfect and I perform all that concerneth you. I perform that which you are ordained by me to do. And so in this, riding on the foal, on the colt, is the message that we have to now look at carefully, for it is the token of the new consciousness on the earth, breaking through the mortal mind. So here, after the prophecy, Jesus rides in to Jerusalem on a colt. Now Matthew gives it one way, Mark gives it another way, John gives it a third way. They're all the same. I think maybe we should look at the two. We're not going to study that carefully. Let's look at Mark and Matthew and you'll see something interesting. In Mark, it's at 11:2. There's one phrase here that's very important. Jesus saith unto them, he sendeth forth two of his disciples and saith unto them, go your way into the village over against you, and as soon as ye be entered into it, you shall find a colt tied. And listen to this phrase, whereon never man sat. A colt tied, whereon never man sat. Loose him and bring him. Now this is a colt on which no man has ever sat. Then over here in Matthew, this will be the 21st chapter and the second verse. We'll do it a little differently. Saying unto them, go into the village over against you, and straightway ye shall find an ass tied, and a colt with her. Loose them and bring them unto me. Here, it's not just the colt, but it's the mother of the colt. The two. The ass and the colt. And over here, it's a colt on which no man has sat. And now John does it this way. Jesus, when he had found a young ass, and therefore he's got the colt on which no man has sat. So that's what he's riding into Jerusalem on, the colt on which no man has sat. And this is the prophecy of Zechariah appearing visibly in the world. Now let's go back to the beginning of this particular episode to catch the meaning. On the next day, much people that were come to the feast, when they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took branches of palm trees and went forth to meet him and cried, Hosanna! Blessed is the King of Israel that cometh in the name of the Lord. Now to come in the name of the Lord means to be the truth of God. And we know that this is the Christ of God, Jesus, appearing as Jesus to man. And this Christ is the truth of God, comes in the name of the Lord. Later, this same Christ will say, follow me. Follow the truth of the Lord. We find palm branches there. Now, why is he riding the young colt? It's the new birth, isn't it? The new consciousness. And why was it an ass and not a giraffe? Why was it not a gorilla? Because it's a dumb beast, isn't it? Because it represents the lower nature of man. It represents that capacity in man which cannot see further than his nose. The emotional side. The lower mental side. The passions that are uncontrollable. The desire realm of man. But he's riding on it. He has tamed it. Why has he tamed it? Because in the new birth, Christ rides on the new consciousness. So riding into Jerusalem, we find, is a new consciousness with Christ in the saddle. And wisely John has taken this and placed it after the resurrection of Lazarus again. Why? Because this is the new consciousness on the earth that was evinced by the change in consciousness of Lazarus. The lower nature of man, the world mind, which functions as the lower nature of man, has been tamed. The Christ has entered human consciousness, dissolving the illusion of mortal sense. And you'll find there's another place in either Matthew or Mark where he's instructed to, the two disciples are instructed to find this colt, where two places meet. You'll find that's the symbol of the cross, and the place where the two places meet is where the human sense of body is erased. Right on the cross is where the human sense of body is shown to be erroneous. The place where two places meet is where they find the colt. That's where you find your new consciousness, at the place where two places meet. When you can overcome the body sense, you find that you are subduing the lower nature of man. You are providing no channel for the world mind. You are overcoming all levels of human resentment and jealousy and envy, the baser passions. And Christ mounts the colt. Just as Christ stood before the woman of Samaria and then sat on the well of her consciousness. Now we're ready to ride into Jerusalem because we're in the new consciousness. Man of earth, mortality has been overcome. The new consciousness is conscious of immortality. Matter, man of matter, has been overcome. The new consciousness is conscious of spiritual identity. Riding into Jerusalem on a young colt, the Master is teaching us this is a pathway to salvation. Up to now, in the human consciousness, salvation meant being good, being honest, being virtuous, tithing, getting on your knees before the Lord, reciting doctrinal prayers and formulae, looking out and doing good to your neighbor. All of this was called the road to salvation. And everybody who followed it found it wasn't the road to salvation at all. They didn't find salvation, they found death. and they found problems on the way to death. And when they had died, they didn't receive salvation. They came back into more bodies and started all over again, looking again for salvation. Because they hadn't ridden into Jerusalem on a young colt. The young colt with Christ in the saddle is divine wisdom. Truth. Truth that is ever truth. Truth you can depend on to take you into Jerusalem, which is the higher consciousness. The glory of heaven on earth, New Jerusalem. And they put palm branches in the way because those who saw were aware of a presence. And the palm branches signified inner peace. And from it we have our Palm Sunday, which should signify the awareness of the presence of Christ in us as the Prince of Peace, making eternal peace within us. And these would strew the way to salvation, but now salvation is something totally different than being good and then going to heaven. Salvation is spiritual evolution in consciousness leading to transition. Not dying, but making ascension out of corporeality. And it can only be done after the second baptism. We who have been baptized but once by human birth cannot make the journey into Jerusalem. The second baptism, signified by Lazarus, made possible this journey. The second baptism is signified again by Christ riding on the new birth, not the old. Ishmael, the son of the handmaid, must go that Isaac may rise in consciousness. The natural birth must be followed by the baptism of the Spirit, the rebirth. And this rebirth done here now on earth is a phase in the second baptism, which leads to riding on the colt into Jerusalem. And now this has been accomplished on the earth. And to some extent, part of the world is aware of something going on which calls for palm branches in the road and hosannas, implying an awareness of the presence and the possibility of salvation. But between this beginning of the journey and the end, there will be sorrow, because the journey carries with it many trials and many tribulations as you approach the ascension. And we are not being led to expect all to be choir music and angels, but rather to know that there are many thorns at this level, all very necessary ones, to lift us beyond a certain remnant of mentality into the immaculate self lived in. Now I, through Zechariah, predicted the new consciousness, the young colt, which was stepping out of the old man into the new. And then I, through Jesus, appeared riding the colt. And I then am the truth that is leading men into Jerusalem, freedom from mortality. The salvation turns out to be freedom from mortality, freedom from everything leading to death. I am the only way man can make transition, and I am the Christ of your being. Whoever is not following the Christ within is not going to know truth and is going to have to perform those acts which only the Christ can perform. So if your question is, how do I know truth? The answer is, you only know it when it is spoken by Christ in you, by Christ in the Bible, by Christ in a seer, by Christ in a prophet. By Christ, and only by Christ, is truth given. And it can be the Christ of Buddha, the Christ of Mohammed, but it must be the Christ, not a man. No opinions of a person. And when you hear it in yourself, you can tell whether it is the Christ or the world mind. You develop the capacity to distinguish between the wheats and the tares, to recognize your master's voice. And even when the voice is silent, you hear it with the inner ear and you feel it with the Christ mind. Now this path to truth is the narrow way. It erases all opinions, all guesses, all speculation, and all authorities, all experts. It tells every theologian that unless Christ is speaking through you, you have nothing to tell me. And it sets every religious authority in proper focus. Because unless a man speaks out of Christ, he is not speaking the word. And if you follow that word that is not spoken out of Christ, you're not on the new colt. You're riding the old jackass, and it won't get you where you're going. Says Jesus, fear not, daughter of Zion. Behold, the king cometh, thy king cometh, sitting on an ass's colt. Now Zion, or Sion, one and the same, you'll remember this is the elect of Israel, those who have been chosen to know the word, to attain the fullness of the Christ. And here you might say, Christ is assuring us that inevitably, mankind will ride upon the colt. That the Christ consciousness must appear on this earth. There is no power to stop it. This is the assurance. Fear not, O daughter of Zion. Behold, thy king cometh, sitting on an ass's colt. This is the assurance that Christ consciousness will form your consciousness. It is the assurance that it was on the earth at that moment that he spoke it. And who would know better than the Christ if it was on the earth or not? It was leading those who had ears to hear. And so it is at this moment that when you behold floods and various other forms of human destruction, you are also beholding the invisible Christ consciousness. You may not see it at the moment, but it is the very Christ consciousness on the earth which makes that appear which we call the flood. Perhaps we'll see that in a little while. These things understood not his disciples at first, but when Jesus was glorified, then remembered they that these things were written of him, such as Zechariah's prophecy, and that they had done these things unto him. And so we find here that the disciples, who were partners in the march into Jerusalem, were completely unaware of the meaning of it. They were there, in body, and they witnessed the physical events. But John wants us to know, at that time, they didn't know what was happening. It was only after the glorification of Christ Jesus. When the miracle of no death had been presented to them, they could understand and connect it up to the entry into Jerusalem of the new consciousness which never knows death. They were like children. Long before they really understand what you're doing, you train them. And then as they grow up, that training becomes very effective. And finally, they understand what they couldn't understand when you trained them. And here the disciples were part of that early training. What it meant, they didn't know, but they had to do what they were told to do. You'll discover or have wondered who went to get the colt. And I think you'll find that Peter and John were the two who were sent, although it doesn't say so. Because that colt was a new consciousness, and these two were the most advanced of the disciples. Now you may remember that we discovered last week that, or several weeks back, that the resurrection of Lazarus was an invisible event. So I was very pleased to discover here a confirmation of it in the next verse of John. The people, therefore, that was with him when he called Lazarus out of his grave and raised him from the dead, bear record. Now, the people who bear record of the death of Lazarus and the raising out of the grave was probably John himself. That editorial we. Just like Joel says, we know you can stop an earthquake. We know you can stop a tidal wave. And who's the we who knows it? Joel. The people who were with him when he raised Lazarus from the dead are John. Mary and Martha were there too. But it was an invisible event. And so John bear record of it. He could witness the invisible. And he confirms that even further here. For this cause the people also met him, for that they heard that he had done this miracle. You see, some see within, and then others hear without. And so thanks to John, we have the record of these invisible happenings. And again, the record of the meaning of the ride into Jerusalem on the colt, emphasizing the young colt. And Mark emphasized a colt no one had sat upon. This was the new consciousness on the earth that no one had sat upon. the realization of spiritual identity now, immortal self now, child of God now, not a dying creature. And yet, the significance of that is still not fully understood. And we're going to have to deepen our significance, our understanding of the significance of what it means to be a child of God, an immortal self now, a spiritual identity now, an infinite being now. And we're going to have to do that today. The Pharisees, therefore, said among themselves, "Perceive ye how ye prevail nothing? Behold, the world is gone after him." And so the Pharisees, in spite of thinking they were merely making a comment, they were prophesying a truth. Behold, the world is gone after him. They too, without really realizing what they had said, had predicted that the world would turn to Christ. And it is. The situation was getting out of hand there. Those who had seen the miracles of Jesus were not aware of what he was teaching, but they were following him. He wasn't fooled by this outer demonstration of palm trees, palm branches and hosannas. They knew nothing of what he was teaching. They were going by outer signs. He was teaching the truth comes only through the inner Christ. And that truth is power. That truth is ordained. That truth is the pathway to transition, which is the only salvation there is. Salvation is transition. Transition is salvation. Salvation is the big promise of religions. But it does not promise transition. It never heard of it. And transition alone is salvation. Transition from man of earth to child of God, living in your spiritual self. This is salvation. This isn't a future heaven, this is a heaven now. This isn't a future peace, this is a peace now. The pathway to Jerusalem here is the pathway to life eternal. And you must be in the truth of the new birth. For only the new birth is one with God. Only the new birth is in the one divine consciousness. Only the new birth takes us out of duality. The baptism of the Spirit, the second baptism, takes us out of the duality of being a creature separated from God into the one undivided divine consciousness which alone manifests its own selfhood as our being. Christ on the colt is the union of identity and truth in you as oneself, moving, guided, totally riding on the truth of Christ's identity. I'd like to plant a seed then at this point. Of the depth that we must go to realize Christ's identity. You've all been willing to say yes. We can see that mortal mind influence us to see things that aren't there, that weren't God created. We've been willing to say that we're under a state of hypnosis. Something else is missing, isn't it? Suppose you close your eyes with me. And think of a dream you may have had. Any dream. And remember how real it was. And how when you awakened, everything that happened in the dream vanished. It was all in the dream. Suppose we invent a dream right now. Suppose in your dream you have a man who is building a house. And suppose he's going to move into that house with his new bride. And suppose he painstakingly builds it using his hard-earned savings to get just the right appearance, the right materials, the right location. And now along comes a flood in one of these eight states and wipes it away. Suppose the man now is looking for the girl who is to marry him and move into this house with, and he can't find her. Suppose she's one of the 30, one-third of a million who are homeless, and maybe among those who are lost. Suppose as you go through this dream, you see how deeply the man is hurt, how he's grieving, how he's worried, how his whole life has been put into jeopardy, how every plan has been shattered. And then you wake up. No house, no flood, no man, no bride, no tragedy. Where was it? It was in the dream. Everything that happened was in the dream. But what is a dream? You didn't sit down and plan that dream in your sleep. It happened in the dream. Something made that happen, and there was nothing you could do about it. It happened without your wish, without your desire, without your plan, without your premeditated thought. It thought itself right through you. And it was real. It was so real that you were very relieved when you awakened and found that it was unreal. And in that dream, the man was so real, the young man, the house was real, you could describe it. The colors, the materials, the view, the number of rooms, you could see the builders putting it up. It was all so real, but what was it? It was thought. It was your thought. But it wasn't your awake thought, your conscious thought, your planned thought. It was your involuntary thought. It was thought that was placed there by a force. A force that was dreaming its thought into you. Thinking its thought into your dream, and everything and every person in the dream would have thought he had free will, a life of his own, a heart of his own, lungs of his own, a body of his own, but he hadn't. The fabric of the dream was the thought of the dreamer. And the dreamer being asleep, not in conscious thought, there was someone else dreaming thinking through you. As you lay in bed asleep, something was putting this into your mind. And we're going to call that the world mind, the dreamer, forcing its thought into you while you slept. And you can accept that that dream was not your personal voluntary thought. You can accept that it was put there. And you had no control over it whatsoever. It was uncontrolled thought. At least it wasn't controlled by you. But now comes the Christ saying to us, "Awake, thou that sleepest." And we must ask ourselves, is that what is actually happening to us? Instead of our dreaming about a house going up, about a flood, about people whose lives are shattered, are we that boy in the dream? Will we awake and discover that what we are doing while we think we're awake is only a dream? The boy in the dream thought he was awake. It never occurred to him that he wasn't. It never occurs to us that we're anything but awake. Then why are we told to awake? Is it possible that we are the characters in the dream? That the houses we're building are made of the very same substance that we're made of? That the rivers around us are made of the very same substance that we're made of? That our world is made of the same substance that we're made of? That all of this is thought of another dreamer than ourselves? That we are the characters in someone else's dream? Can you conceive of that? Maybe you had better, because you're going to be asked to go that far in order to know truth. You're going to have to discover for yourself that your world is a dream. Not you're just hypnotized, not that it's a suggestion, not that it's an appearance, but that we are made of thought. And the world mind is thinking, dreaming, what we seem to experience. Now, when you can go that far, you will know that everything you're looking at is in the dream, and it is the same substance as you are. It doesn't matter what you see, it's the dream. It doesn't matter what you think, it's the dream. Or touch, or feel, or hear. It's the dream. And when you can go that far to accept or to even give thought to the possibility and then to meditate upon it until you can understand that you're not God's creation as a physical human being. Therefore, what are you? If you're not God's creation as a physical human being, what are you? And finally, we come to that conclusion, I must be a dream. The very self that I'm so proud of is not a mortal at all, and it's not going to become an immortal. It's a dream. Everyone I know has to be a dream, because that which is not God created is not creation. Does God create floods and kill God's creation? Does God turn 1/3 of 1 million people homeless in floods? Does God build tombstones? Does God build battlefields? What's happening? You're seeing the world dream. And you say, it's impossible. It can't be a dream. And God says, but that's all it is. My kingdom is reality. What is the world? My kingdom is not of this world. What is the world? It's time to stop calling it hypnosis. It's time to stop calling it an appearance. It's time to stop calling it matter. It's time to stop calling it anything except what it is, a dream. And you're not dreaming it. You're as much the dream as the characters in your dream. And they have no will, but they think they have. They have no independence, but they think they have. And the moment you stop and dwell upon it, you'll find that you've never been able to control this dream. You can't control your life. And the reason you haven't is because you can't control a dream. No character in your dream has ever controlled his life. It was controlled for him. And the minute you awakened, his dream, his life, his dream life vanished. Lazarus awakened. We cannot know it from this side of the veil, but his dream life vanished. Jesus awakened. His dream life vanished. Whenever you awake, and there are moments when you do, your dream life vanishes, but you're not aware of it. You say, I feel so beautiful, so strange. It's all one. I don't see individuals. I feel a peace. Yes, because you're not in the dream. You're not in that controlled dream of the world mind. The second baptism doesn't come while we're trying to make the dream a happy dream, a better dream, a comfortable dream. It only comes when we're willing to face the fact that flesh is the dream. Corporeality is the dream. And the good of it and the bad of it are the dream. We read about Adam. And in his sleep it says that Eve came out of his rib, formed out of his rib. It's more than just a symbol. It's telling you that he was dreaming. And he dreamed of woman. And then he dreamed of a world. And then he dreamed of evil. And then he dreamed of serpents. Everything after Adam is a dream, right from Eve. We're the dream of Adam. We're still the dream of Adam. And it's only when you step out of the dream of the world mind that you discover you never were the person, the mortal, the creature, the flesh, the form. In order to be reborn of the Spirit, we must first accept the truth that if God is all and God is not that which dies, then the flesh which dies I cannot be. It must be the dream. The channel for the dream is obviously the human mind. But the human mind isn't dreaming. The human mind is still the substance of the dream. The dreamer is the world mind. Somebody asked me about Lucifer today. There he is. The world mind dreaming is Lucifer. That's the fallen. That's the conflict in heaven, the war in heaven. But it's all part of a purpose. It's only when we come to the realization that the world mind dreaming is dreaming the world that we are in. Then we can see that the world mind dreams its dream through your mind. Your mind becomes a channel for the dream of the world. It dreams bodies. It dreams rivers. It dreams planets. It dreams a whole universe of matter. And the subject and the object and the actions and the motions and the lifespans, even the reincarnations, are all part of the dream. Every one of the reincarnated lives you may have lived are part of the dream. That is the substance of them. I, the Christ, never is incarnate. The word incarnation is misunderstood. There is flesh, and there is flesh. There is mortal flesh, which is dream flesh. And there is spiritual flesh, which is reality. Christ is spiritual flesh. Lazarus reborn is spiritual flesh. Jesus Christ reborn is spiritual flesh. And when you say Christ incarnate, that means in spiritual flesh. The word incarnate is incorrect because its connotation is material flesh. Christ manifest is more accurate. Incarnate is often used and then abused because it has two meanings. Its first meaning is in the flesh, human flesh. When it's used by a mystic, it means in the spiritual flesh. Now, you have never been incarnate in material flesh. That's the dream. And so when you reincarnate, that's just the repetition of the dream. And the reason the dream is repeated and repeated and repeated is because we're still in the dream. The pathway to salvation is out of the dream. And so, first, incarnation is the illusion of being in the flesh. That is the meaning of incarnation. The illusion of flesh. Reincarnation is the return to the illusion of flesh. No actual incarnation exists because there is no flesh. And no reincarnation exists because there is no flesh to reincarnate into. But until we learn we're in the dream and what to do about it, we never come out of it. And as a result, we don't make our transition. We don't attain salvation. We come back into the illusion of another incarnation. So we're on the wheel of reincarnation, or the wheel of illusion, repeated and repeated and repeated, until that day when Lazarus walks out of the tomb. When you ride on the colt of wisdom, divine truth, and it leads you on the pathway to transition out of the dream, which is all that ascension ever meant. To ascend out of the dream of this world. Now, most of us have accepted in one way or another that Adam had a dream, or that we're in a dream, or the world is a dream, but we have never really, really taken it as a must to sit down and face this truth and do something about it. We figure, oh, well, something will happen. But you're wrong, something won't happen. You have to lift the veil of the dream. And so we've come to grips with that dream very quickly. And let's see that the dream is thought. That the fabric of the world is thought. And it isn't God's thought at all. God's not thinking forest fires. God's not thinking murders and suicides and accidents. God's not thinking diseases. In him is no darkness at all. Who's thinking these things? We are, and the world mind in us is. Just as the characters in your dream were really your thought. They had no thought of their own. We have no thought of our own, but we think we have. The only thought we have is the thought which comes from the world mind through us and becomes what we think is my thought. I'm going to do this today. What about the characters in your dream when they decided to do something? They decided to build a house. Did they really? Were they building a house? Where's the house? You awakened and the house was gone. You think you built houses. Did you? Or did world mind build them through you out of thought, which you accepted as your thought, and called it a building? You think you're building a life. Are you? Or is world mind through you building its thought as the fabric of your life? Now look, we're in the highest mysticism we can get at this moment, and I want you to see very carefully that whatever you're looking at everywhere in this world, you're not looking at anything at all except your own thought. That's all you can ever see. You're not seeing a mountain, you're seeing your thought about what you call a mountain. You're not seeing a river. You're not seeing anything except your thought. This is important. And when you know that you're seeing your thought, you'll understand why Isaiah, speaking from the inner Christ, said, "My thoughts are not your thoughts." Your thoughts are from the world mind, from the Lucifer mind. You're looking out. You're seeing the thoughts of the deceiver, which you're calling this world of things. And it is not your Father's kingdom. It is not reality. It is dream thought. And you're looking at thought forms in the dream. Thought forms in the dream constitute the dream world, which is not the Father's kingdom. Oh, they're beautiful forms. And some are ugly forms. And some threaten you. And some look like paradise. There are places to go on vacations that are just the most wonderful forms. And then there are other places that are hell holes. And they're all made of the same fabric, thought. The good of it, the evil of it. The floods we're experiencing in 8 states are human thought. You are looking at human thought and calling it a flood. You're looking at 375,000 homeless people, but you're not.